Chapter 94. On the road, the bright morning sun dazzled the eyes. The snow had ceased, the mists had vanished, the mountain air was so clear and light that the new sensation of breathing it was like the having entered on a new existence. To help the delusion, the solid ground itself seemed gone, and the mountain, a shining waste of immense white heaps and masses, to be a region of cloud floating between the blue sky above and the earth far below. Some dark specks in the snow, like knots upon a little thread, beginning at the convent door and winding away down the descent in broken lengths which were not yet pieced together, showed where the brethren were at work in several places clearing the track. Already the snow had begun to be foot-thawed again about the door. Mules were busily brought out, tied to the rings in the wall, and laden. Strings of bells were buckled on, burdens were adjusted, the voices of drivers and riders sounded musically. Some of the earliest had even already resumed their journey, and, both on the level summit by the dark water near the convent, and on the downward way of yesterday's ascent, little moving figures of men and mules, reduced to miniatures by the immensity around, went with a clear tinkling of bells, and a pleasant harmony of tongues. In the supper room of last night, a new fire, piled upon the feathery ashes of the old one, shone upon a homely breakfast of loaves, butter, and milk. It also shone on the courier of the Dorrit family, making tea for his party from a supply he had brought up with him, together with several other small stores which were chiefly laid in for the use of the strong body of inconvenience. Mr. Gowan and Glandois of Paris had already breakfasted, and were walking up and down by the lake, smoking their cigars. Gowan, eh? Muttered Tip, otherwise Edward Dorrit Esquire, turning over the leaves of the book, when the courier had left them to breakfast. Then Gowan is the name of a puppy, that's all I have got to say. If it was worth my while, I'd pull his nose. But it isn't worth my while, fortunately for him. How's his wife, Amy? I suppose you know. You generally know things of that sort. She is better, Edward. But they are not going today. They are not going today. Fortunately for that fellow too, said Tip, or he and I might have come into collision. It is thought better here, that she should lie quiet today, and not be fatigued and shaken by the ride down until tomorrow. With all my heart. But you talk, as if you had been nursing her. You haven't been relapsing into Mrs. General is not here, into old habits, have you, Amy? He asked her the question with a sly glance of observation at Miss Fanny, and at his father too. I have only been in to ask her if I could do anything for her, Tip, said Little Dorrit. You needn't call me Tip, Amy child, returned that young gentleman with a frown, because that's an old habit, and one you may as well lay aside. I didn't mean to say so, Edward dear. I forgot. It was so natural once, that it seemed at the moment the right word. Miss Fanny struck in. Natural, and right word, and once, and all the rest of it. Nonsense, you little thing. I know perfectly well why you have been taking such an interest in this Mrs. Gowan. You can't blind me. I will not try to, Fanny. Don't be angry. Angry. Returned that young lady with a flounce. I have no patience, which indeed was the truth. Pray, Fanny, said Mr. Dorrit, raising his eyebrows, what do you mean? Explain yourself. Never mind, Pa, replied Miss Fanny, it's no great matter. Amy will understand me. She knew, or knew of, this Mrs. Gowan before yesterday, and she may as well admit that she did. My child, said Mr. Dorrit, turning to his younger daughter, has your sister any authority for this curious statement? However meek we are, Miss Fanny struck in, Before she could answer, "We don't go creeping into people's rooms on the tops of cold mountains, and sitting perishing in the frost with people, unless we know something about them beforehand. It's not very hard to divine whose friend Mrs. Gowan is." Apostrophe, whose friend? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired her father. "Pa, I am sorry to say," apostrophe returned Miss Fanny, who had by this time succeeded in goading herself into a state of much ill usage and grievance, which she was often at great pains to do, "that I believe her to be a friend of that very objectionable and unpleasant person, who, with a total absence of all delicacy, which our experience might have led us to expect from him, insulted us and outraged our feelings in so public and willful a manner on an occasion to which it is understood among us that we will not more pointedly allude." Apostrophe, Amy, my child, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, tempering a bland severity with a dignified affection, "is this the case?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, little Dorrit mildly answered, "Yes, it was. Yes, it is." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Fanny. "Of course. I said so. And now, Pa, I do declare once for all this young lady was in the habit of declaring the same thing once for all every day of her life, and even several times in a day, that this is shameful. I do declare once for all that it ought to be put a stop to. Is it not enough that we have gone through what is only known to ourselves, but are we to have it thrown in our faces, perseveringly and systematically, by the very person who should spare our feelings most? Are we to be exposed to this unnatural conduct every moment of our lives? Are we never to be permitted to forget? I say again, it is absolutely infamous." Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, Amy, apostrophe, observed her brother, shaking his head, "you know I stand by you whenever I can, and on most occasions. But I must say, that, upon my soul, I do consider it rather an unaccountable mode of showing your sisterly affection, that you should back up a man who treated me in the most ungentlemanly way in which one man can treat another. And who, apostrophe," he added convincingly, "must be a low-minded thief, you know, or he never could have conducted himself as he did." Apostrophe, and see, apostrophe, said Miss Fanny, "see what is involved in this. Can we ever hope to be respected by our servants? Never. Here are our two women, and Pa's valet, and a footman, and a courier, and all sorts of dependents, and yet in the midst of these, we are to have one of ourselves rushing about with tumblers of cold water, like a menial. Why, a policeman," apostrophe said Miss Fanny, "if a beggar had a fit in the street, could but go plunging about with tumblers, as this very Amy did in this very room before our very eyes last night. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't so much mind that, once in a way," apostrophe remarked Mr. Edward. "But dear Clennam, as he thinks proper to call himself, is another thing." Apostrophe, he is part of the same thing, apostrophe returned Miss Fanny, "and of a piece with all the rest. He obtruded himself upon us in the first instance. We never wanted him. I always showed him, for one, that I could have dispensed with his company with the greatest pleasure. He then commits that gross outrage upon our feelings, which he never could or would have committed, but for the delight he took in exposing us, and then we are to be demeaned for the service of his friends. Why, I don't wonder at this Mr. Gowan's conduct towards you. What else was to be expected, when he was enjoying our past misfortunes gloating over them at the moment? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Father Edward, no indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, pleaded little Dorrit. Neither Mr. nor Mrs. Gowan had ever heard our name. They were, and they are, quite ignorant of our history. Apostrophe, so much the worse, apostrophe, retorted Fanny, determined not to admit anything in extenuation, for then you have no excuse. If they had known about us, you might have felt yourself called upon to conciliate them. That would have been a weak and ridiculous mistake, but I can respect a mistake, whereas I can't respect a willful and deliberate abasing of those who should be nearest and dearest to us. No. I can't respect that. I can do nothing but denounce that. Apostrophe, I never offend you willfully, Fanny, apostrophe said little Dorrit, though you are so hard with me. Apostrophe, then you should be more careful, Amy, apostrophe returned her sister. If you do such things by accident, you should be more careful. If I happen to have been born in a peculiar place, and under peculiar circumstances, that blunted my knowledge of propriety, I fancy I should think myself bound to consider at every step, am I going, ignorantly, to compromise any near and dear relations? That is what I fancy I should do, if it was my case. Apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit now interposed, at once to stop these painful subjects by his authority, and to point their moral by his wisdom. My dear, apostrophe said he to his younger daughter, I beg you to say no more. Your sister Fanny expresses herself strongly, but not without considerable reason. You have now a great position to support. That great position is not occupied by yourself alone, but by me, and by us. Us. Now, it is incumbent upon all people in an exalted position, but it is particularly so on this family, for reasons which I will not dwell upon, to make themselves respected. To be vigilant in making themselves respected. Dependents, to respect us, must be kept at a distance and kept down. Down. Therefore, you're not exposing yourself to the remarks of our attendants, by appearing to have at any time dispensed with their services, and performed them for yourself, is highly important. Apostrophe, why, who can doubt it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Fanny. It's the essence of everything. Apostrophe Fanny, apostrophe returned her father, grandiloquently, give me leave, my dear. We then come to Mr. Clennam. I am free to say that I do not, Amy, share your sister's sentiments, that is to say altogether in reference to Mr. Clennam. I am content to regard that individual in the light of generally a well-behaved person. A well-behaved person. Nor will I inquire whether Mr. Clennam did, at any time, obtrude himself on my society. He knew my society to be sought, and his plea might be that he regarded me in the light of a public character. But there were circumstances attending my slight knowledge of Mr. Clennam, it was very slight, which, apostrophe here Mr. Dorrit became extremely grave and impressive, would render it highly indelicate in Mr. Clennam to seek to renew communication with me, or with any member of my family under existing circumstances. If Mr. Clennam has sufficient delicacy to perceive the impropriety of any such attempt, I am bound as a responsible gentleman to defer to that delicacy on his part. If, on the other hand, Mr. Clennam has not that delicacy, I cannot for a moment hold any correspondence with so coarse a mind. In either case, it would appear that Mr. Clennam is put altogether out of the question, and that we have nothing to do with him, or he with us. Mrs. General, apostrophe, the entrance of the lady whom he announced, to take her place at the breakfast table, terminated the discussion. Shortly afterwards, the courier announced that the valet, and the footman, and the two maids, and the four guides, and the 14 mules, were in readiness. So the breakfast party went out to the convent door to join the cavalcade. Mr. Gowan stood aloof with his cigar and pencil, but Mr. Blandois was on the spot, to pay his respects to the ladies. When he gallantly pulled off his slouched hat to little Dorrit, she thought he had even a more sinister look, standing sword and cloaked in the snow, than he had in the firelight overnight. But, as both her father and her sister received his homage with some favor, she refrained from expressing any distrust of him, lest it should prove to be a new blemish derived from her prison birth. Nevertheless, as they wound down the rugged way, while the convent was yet in sight, she more than once looked round, and descried Mr. Blandois, backed by the convent smoke which rose straight and high from the chimneys, in a golden film, always standing on one jutting point looking down after them. Long after he was a mere black stick in the snow, she felt as though she could yet see that smile of his, that high nose, and those eyes that were too near it. And even after that, when the convent was gone, and some light morning clouds veiled the pass below it, the ghastly skeleton arms by the wayside seemed to be all pointing up at him. More treacherous than snow, perhaps, colder at heart, and harder to melt, Blandois of Paris by degrees passed out of her mind, as they came down into the softer regions. Again the sun was warm, again the streams descending from glaciers and snowy caverns were refreshing to drink at, again they came among the pine trees, the rocky rivulets, the verdant heights and dales, the wooden chalets and rough zigzag fences of Swiss country. Sometimes the way so widened that she and her father could ride abreast. And then to look at him, handsomely clothed in his fur and broadcloths, rich, free, numerously served and attended, his eyes roving far away among the glories of the landscape, no miserable screen before them to darken his sight, and cast its shadow on him, was enough. Her uncle was so far rescued from that shadow of old, that he wore the clothes they gave him, and performed some ablutions as a sacrifice to the family credit, and went where he was taken, with a certain patient animal enjoyment, which seemed to express that the air and change did him good. In all other respects, save one, he shone with no light, but such as was reflected from his brother. His brother's greatness, wealth, freedom, and grandeur, pleased him without any reference to himself. Silent and retiring, he had no use for speech, when he could hear his brother speak, no desire to be waited on, so that the servants devoted themselves to his brother. The only noticeable change he originated in himself, was an alteration in his manner to his younger niece. Every day it refined more and more into a marked respect, very rarely shown by age to youth, and still more rarely susceptible, one would have said, of the fitness with which he invested it. On those occasions when Miss Fanny did declare once for all, he would take the next opportunity of bearing his gray head before his younger niece, and of helping her to alight, or handing her to the carriage, or showing her any other attention, with the profoundest deference. Yet it never appeared misplaced or forced, being always heartily simple, spontaneous, and genuine. Neither would he ever consent, even at his brother's request, to be helped to any place before her, or to take precedence of her in anything. So jealous was he of her being respected, that, on this very journey down from the great Saint Bernard, he took sudden and violent umbrage at the footman's, being remiss to hold her stirrup, though standing near when she dismounted, and unspeakably astonished the whole retinue, by charging at him on a hard-headed mule, riding him into a corner, and threatening to trample him to death. They were a goodly company, and the innkeepers all but worshipped them. Wherever they went, their importance preceded them in the person of the courier riding before, to see that the rooms of state were ready. He was the herald of the family procession. The great traveling carriage came next, containing, inside, Mr. Dorrit, Miss Dorrit, Miss Amy Dorrit, and Mrs. General, outside, some of the retainers, and, in fine weather, Edward Dorrit Esquire, for whom the box was reserved. Then came the chariot containing Frederick Dorrit Esquire, and an empty place occupied by Edward Dorrit Esquire, in wet weather. Then came the furgon with the rest of the retainers, the heavy baggage, and as much as it could carry of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.